Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us, please send us an email at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, you can contact us through our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. On that same website, we have all of our shows archived. So if you'd like to hear a prior show, go to recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about communication. And a lot of people send in and they ask, well, especially me, I suppose, since I'm the voice, they ask how you can keep talking, how you can keep answering, how you can keep going and communicating. Is it kind of the, I suppose they call, it's an Americanism, but people call it the gift of gab, right? And it is indeed an experience skill to a certain extent, but it is a learned skill. Mm-hmm. It's not something that everyone can't do. It's just that I've been doing it a really long time, and I do a lot of public speaking, and that does make a difference. And one of the, I'm just going to say something just personal right off the top, and then we're going to talk about the practicalities and what we experience as a leader. But one of the things that I have noticed about rather inexperienced speakers is that they speak very swiftly. They speak fast. And if you're speaking very fast, maybe because you're nervous, it's hard for people to understand you, hard for them to listen. So that would be the only thing I would say about actual speaking style. It may occur to you after I've said that, that I speak rather slowly, and I leave spaces in between when I speak, because A, you can't see me. This is, well, it's radio in a sense, but it's radio, and you need to be able to listen and understand. And this is a global show, and not everyone's first language is English. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it is true that my speaking style will speed up as we talk to each other, as we get more into the topic. But still, it's important to speak so that you can, so that people can understand you and not mush all your words together and speak very swiftly. So that's the only thing I'm going to say about actual speaking style, because people have asked me. And you don't think about it until someone tells you. And someone told me that once. They said, don't talk so fast. Oh, that's an idea. Okay, so let's get into the show. So what kind of communication skills do we need as leaders within our context of, well, whatever we're doing? A seminar, a workshop, an alternative dispute resolution, a negotiation. What kind of communication skills do we need? And I see we have lots of people. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here. Thank you for your participation. And you know what? I can see already that our communication skills are dividing up into topics. And since I've already started this topic by talking about speaking style, I think we're going to use speaking as our first communication skill that we're going to need. Yeah. Oh, we have lots of questions. How wonderful. Yay. Thank you all for being here. Now, let's see. What kind of speaking communication skills do we need? Mashiko and others are saying you need to be able to speaking skills of persuasion to encourage progress. Persuasion to encourage progress. And yes, and I'm going to say, and we've got quite a bit of agreement about that, and a lot of people are saying to persuade one side or the other, to persuade on the issues. Many times we are the third party impartial, right? So we don't really take a side so much that we're going to be persuasive on. I mean, we might be a participant. We might take a side. So that would be a persuasive act. But let's talk about the ability to persuade people to move forward, to get over their differences, to come to a practical conclusion. That's persuasion too, right? To be able to, yes, to be able to affect the group dynamic, quite a few people are saying. And that's what it really is. It's the ability to get people to negotiate. Negotiation implies some compromise, right? And at least to listen to each other so we can arrive at a plan. And since we're practical people and we don't just do theory, so that we can arrive at a plan that we're going to execute, that we're going to do, which is the main part of it. Excuse me, I'm going to take a sip of water. My goodness. So that, see, that's good communication. I'm saying, well, I got to take a sip of water. Pardon me. So, yes, you need to have persuasive communication skills because that's how we get people to get to a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yes, people, quite a few people are saying, and that's how you get asked back. Yes, this is true. You get a reputation within the community of being able to handle, well, being able to handle anything, really, because a lot of times people give up or they get angry that their advice is not being followed. And we, of course, never lose our temper because that is not a good communication skill. And we don't want the participants to do it. Which leads us to Orvis and others talking about you need good speaking skills, good communication skills, to have firmness for the civility rules. Firmness for the civility rules. Yes, we talk about the civility rules a lot on this show. Prior shows archived, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. But we talk about the civility rules. I always say there are no actual rules at Recipe for Peace Now. Whatever works, whatever moves the process forward. But we do have some basic civility rules that you will enforce with firmness, as Orvis and others are agreeing, say. You do it through your communication style. You do it with your words. The basic ones are treat everyone in a civil manner. All participants, never be rude, never raise your voice, unless you're cheering in enthusiasm, yes, and never impede on someone else's speaking time. Those are just the very basic ones, depending on the group, and I'm going to say it depends again, which you guys think I say lots, and I probably do, but it depends on the situation. You might have to have more specific ones. Yes, a lot of people are saying that they always add a civility rule of no electronic devices so that people aren't sitting there texting or looking at their phones or their computers. Well, really, your phone is a computer nowadays, at least in many parts of the world it is. So that would be another civility rule. It depends on the group. Depends on your experience with them that they're going to do that. I don't usually confiscate. People are saying confiscate. I think I usually deal with adults. And if I ask them to turn their device to vibrate, which is silent, of course, and not use it during our sessions, that pretty much does it. But yes, that is a civility rule that is becoming more and more common to actually say. I didn't used to think that you needed to actually tell people the civility rules until they became uncivil, right? But nowadays, depending on the group, I do indeed sometimes state them right out so that we all think on them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the things that I do like. I like us to put away our electronic devices because we're talking with each other, we're thinking about it, and if we need to look something up, we haven't thrown them out the window. You know what I mean? You can do that. It's just that it impedes the one-on-one. Mm-hmm. It does. And so, yes, that would be a good civility rule. Quite a few of you, and thank you for all of your participation, for being here and communicating. Quite a few of you are saying that you like written civility rules. If you think so, I'm going to say it depends on perhaps your personality as a leader and perhaps the group. Mm-hmm. And you state them right out. This is kind of, we're having two camps about whether they should be written or not. I'm kind of, don't usually write them down. In fact, I don't think I ever have, because they're pretty basic. I mean, it's not like you can't remember them. And if you write them down, then that's as many as you have, right? And I kind of, well, make up is a bad word. People are going, you make them up, don't you? Yeah, I kind of, let's call it add to the list, depending on what's going on. Yeah, depending on the group, the dynamic, if somebody is bullying, for example, we don't allow things like that. You see, if you have a civility rules list written down, it says some pretty basic things, like everybody will take their turn and then be quiet while someone else is speaking type things. You can announce these, and if you have them written down, then those are the rules, right? And there's always some interesting participant who likes to look at them and find a loophole. Mm-hmm. But if the civility rules are more fluid, then there's no loopholes. Yes, I have been doing this a long time. Let's see, a lot of people, and so that's, I think that that's a good point about the civility rules. I'm getting a lot of agreement. A lot of you would still like to write them down. You know, that is a personal preference. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Abriel and others are saying that one of the speaking communication points that we need to do is to have clear instructions. Mm-hmm. Tell people what they need to do clearly so that there's no confusion. You ever had some sort of an instruction from somebody, a boss, a family member, or somebody, and you went, yeah, I'm on it, and then you went and did it really well, but that's not what they wanted, and they say, that's not what I said. And the answer is, yeah, that's what you said because that's what I heard. And obviously there was a disconnect there and the instructions weren't clear. Mm-hmm. Now, instructions are something that I like to write down if they're complicated. Then we're all clear on it. And I don't just hand people a slip of paper and say, these are your instructions, and have them read it. Because quite frankly, that's open to interpretation, right? And what I thought was a clear instruction isn't. Somebody thinks about it in a different way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's not what I, you read it that way, huh? You ever had that? I have, especially with family members. You tell them something, you send them an email, and they take it in a funny manner. It's very strange. And so it is, the instructions not only need to be clear, but they need to be discussed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that everybody understands exactly what it is that you meant. Because quite frankly, the clearest thing that you write, it's subject to interpretation by the reader, by the instructee. They'll think of it and look at it within their own, yeah, within their own bias. But bias seems like a like a bad thing. Thank you. People are saying within their own context, and that's what it is. They look at it and see that, and read it and look at it and think about it, and you need to be open to explain it, right? Not go, I told you what to do. Well, obviously not sufficiently, because it wasn't done. And somebody probably wanted to, but they just didn't understand what it was they were doing. So, clear instructions is a very important communication skill, right? Right. And you need to be open to getting questions in the middle of it, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's fairly complicated or it's time-sensitive or something like that, sometimes in a nice way I check in as the leader and I say, how's it going with your project? Mm-hmm. How far have we gotten? Do you need help? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't want somebody to get there, to get to the next meeting when they were supposed to bring something or do something or research something or look at something. Or, and well, not even a somebody, but even a team, and say, well, we got this far. Well, it's not far enough. Why did you do that? You see? And the answer is sometimes they just don't understand the instructions or they haven't bought in because all of them have different opinions about what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. Mm-mm-mm. We're going to make it very clear so that we don't have that. And I'm a big checker-inner. I think that's kind of a good thing, to have people send you a progress report is what it really is. It's a progress report. How are we doing? Progress report. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Khan and others are saying it's not just clear instructions. It's clear assignments and delegation of duties. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You say this is what we need to do. And you're very clear about it. That's your instruction. Now, the question is, who is specifically going to take on the task of doing it? Yeah. So we have to have clear assignments, what it is that your task is, and what we expect of you the next time. Mm-hmm. And what we expect of you in a progress report. Yeah. Very clearly say what it is that we're doing, that's the instructions, and who it is specifically, and what part of the instructions, what part of the task is theirs. Mm-hmm. This cannot be overemphasized. Groups fail because people have not been given proper assignment and task instructions. They really do. Because people go, well, I spent my time and my effort and I did my best and you didn't like it. Well, you know, it's really our fault, the fault of the leader, because we don't want people to have to just spin their wheels, to just, you know, not get anywhere. We want them to really help. Mm-hmm. And that's task assignment and what we're calling, a lot of people are calling delegation of duty. Mm-hmm. We need to get so much done. This person needs to do this. This person needs to do that. We need to reconvene. We need to have a progress report. Delegation of duty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. It's a good way of looking at it because that's what it really is. It's a delegation of duty. Mm-hmm. Okay, what else do we need? Yeah, a lot of people are getting back to the clear enunciation for understanding. Sean and others are saying that's one of the most important things, one of the things that we see a lot. I do a lot of groups and a lot of corporations where English, which is what I speak, is not the first language of a certain percentage of people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes everyone. And sometimes their native tongues are all different. Their native languages are all different. And the common language we have is English, but because it's the language of business in the United States. But if English is not your first language, and even if you're fluent in it, if you really haven't been immersed, you know what I mean, you need to kind of translate in the back of your mind subconsciously from English into whatever your native language is so you can think on it, right? Yeah. So clear enunciation is important. Time is important to think about it for a second. Mm-hmm. And also, I have done quite a few by now where sometimes you need to have an interpreter. If the people in the room all speak English and they're fluent, and they speak the same language that's not English, an interpreter is often helpful. Now, the interpreter is just supposed to interpret the words, right? Yeah. Yeah. People are saying you need an interpreter. This is really actually true. Pratima and others are saying that the interpreter is necessary because the English is so accented that a lot of times we don't quite understand each other. It makes for kind of difficulty. And it's been my experience, and that happens. I don't usually have it, but I notice that other people in the room do. They've learned English from a certain accent, usually in school, sometimes a kind of a, you know, that international accent that sounds kind of British but really isn't. It's an international accent from going to international schools. And even adults learn it that way because they go to international schools to learn business skills, right? Right. And the accent is clear, but sometimes people who haven't learned English in the same type of language school have a different kind of an accent, and it doesn't help with the other participants. And then people get frustrated, or they get polite, and they just kind of nod at each other. But you can see in their eyes that they really, they're just kind of being polite. They haven't really, we haven't communicated. We haven't communicated in speaking. We're not really communicating what needs to be done and what the issues are and like that. There's just a barrier. It's a language barrier. And that's the moment for an interpreter. Mm-hmm. I like someone very experienced, because they have to do it fast and clearly. I think it's very important for the interpreter to be very, very clear. Over the years, I have developed kind of a list of people that I call for different languages. I confess that one of my criteria to get on my list, because I like you and I think that you're really good, is that you can interpret literally, not your opinion of what they said, but what they actually said. You can do it swiftly, because people talk as, you know, people talk fast, and then you have to interpret it quickly. You ask the person to pause, and then the interpreter says what they said, right? Because that's how interpreters work. They don't just do it over you, usually, although they can on the fly. But I like to have an interpreter who is very clear communicating in a speech-wise, because the interpreter is not just for me. It's for everyone in the room. The interpreter is making the speaking clear to everyone, right? Yeah. And I also like an interpreter that has experience, and you have to find somebody like this, these schools and like that. If you're very new to this and you don't have anyone, take a recommendation from someone who is experienced in the field. Because frequently the interpreter needs to ask a question so that they can do an interpretation properly. Mm-hmm. And they have to be able to do that and understand how. Right? Yeah. See, that's the ticket to it. Because people are saying, I don't like to use an interpreter. Yes, there is interpretation software. Mm-hmm. We've tried it. It's getting better. It's kind of more basic than our usual what we need. And it's a little bit on the sluggish side, has been my experience. Yeah. See, the people are asking about the UN and places like that where they see interpretation in people's ears. They're listening to a speech and they're listening to it in their native language. The answer to that is yes and no. That is a sophisticated delivery system. Everybody has earphones to speak in their own tongue for the interpretation. But that is not actually done by software. The actual interpretation is by a person who is very experienced in interpreting and is doing it simultaneously to the speaker. And a very experienced person can do it simultaneously. It's pretty darn cool. And then you don't have to have the breaks where they catch up. That is a great deal of experience, and that is a little more complicated. A kind of common language would have a common to your area. In my area in the United States, we see a lot of interpretation. Mostly I have interpreters in everything, but some of them speak more than one language. Asian dialects, you have to speak more than one language. Mandarin is the most common for business, and then there's other ones too. So that makes a difference. And then we see a lot of Spanish, a lot of Asian, and not so many others, but there are very skilled interpreters in all of them. So that's the ticket. And yes, the UN thing where you see it in their ears, that's a simulcast. That is someone's doing it at the same time, which is the most useful because you can keep going that way. Yeah, everybody's saying you need an interpreter for understanding even if you're speaking the same language. Sometimes if the English is very accented, sometimes an interpreter. This is so strange. I'm not going to use names. I actually once was working with a corporation where the reps from the corporation, the heads of the corporation, were very deep south in the United States. And they were actually from New Orleans area, from Louisiana. And in different parts of the United States, there's a different accent to the English. We all speak English. Well, generally speaking, the language is English. But there are regional accents. And we had people who were not from Louisiana and some people who were from other countries, and English wasn't their first language, but they were really, really seriously fluent. I mean, we wouldn't have needed an interpreter for them. Honest to God, I actually had to call in an interpreter, pretended it was for everybody, because none of us knew what they were saying. It was just the weirdest thing. It was like, yes, we're going to have an interpreter, even though we're all speaking the same language, because there were many of us in this room who are not native. And like, it was, honest to goodness, it was really for the people from Louisiana. They were speaking English, but it was what they call a patois, a very, very heavy accented English dialect. Honest to goodness, I didn't know what they were saying half the time. I needed the interpreter. And you know what? They understood what we were saying. So but they asked the patois, the Louisiana interpreter, the Southern interpreter, what it was we were saying on a regular basis. They didn't understand us either, and that's the truth. You know, that's an interesting point. People are asking how I found such a person to interpret, because it's not a foreign language, right? You know, I thought about it, and I found a university professor who is a linguist who studied accents and regional dialect. Mm-hmm. And was really very good, really understood regional dialects. It was the darndest thing. It was just like, that's the first time I've actually had to have an interpreter for the English language from somebody who's actually a native speaker in the United States. Fantabulous, yeah. And believe me, it wasn't just for the other participants who were not first language. It was for me. I got to tell you, it really was. It's kind of like, yeah, what did you say? Really? No idea what you're saying. Fantastic. But everybody could read the writing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So research was not bad. And reports were fine. It was just the actual language. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very strange. So, anyway, a lot of you have had that. Yes. And I understand from all of you participations, and thank you for being here, that there are regional dialects all over, especially in Asian countries, I gather, where you are all speaking the same language, but you've come from a different area, like Louisiana is a different area in the United States, and there is such a heavy regional to it that y'all could use a Mandarin interpreter. There you go. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, what other kind of communication, what other kind of communication skills do we need as leaders within our context of workshops and seminars and alternative dispute resolution and negotiations and all kinds of good stuff like that? And I think our next segment that we're going to talk about, because we've already alluded to it, is writing. We need to be clear in our written communication, right? Right. Mm-hmm. This is a very important point. Most people that are participants can read the written, even if their dialect is different or even if they are from a different area, from a different part of the world. But whatever language that you are communicating in, and I know that a lot of you do not, this is a global show, and a lot of you do not lead in English. You understand English because you're listening to the show, of course, but you do, but when you do a group, you are not leading in English. So whatever it is that, whatever language you're leading in, the people, even if it's not their native language, will usually be able to read, will be able to read the written word or get it interpreted very well because it interprets literally. Mm-hmm. Most of the time people can read. They just, it's hard for them to think fast enough to speak, or we've just talked about the heavy accent. So the written communication is very important. It needs to be very clear, and I think it needs to be fairly frequent, like emails and things. We're not just talking about research. We're talking about emails, yeah. We're talking about any kind of written communication, texts. Always remember when you write something, that humor should not be written because it ain't funny. It's just not. Humor takes tone of voice and body language and like that. When you write something down and you hear it in your head as being funny or sarcastic or, you know, cool in some way, look at it, go, oh, I really liked writing that, and then delete it. Because when it gets to the other side, they're not going to hear it in your head. They're going to hear it in their head, and they're not going to know what you're talking about, and they might get offended. So be careful. Do not send anything in writing that could at least be the least bit offensive or the least bit misinterpreted. If you are unsure because you are too close, and sometimes that happens. You know, you're pretty sure that you've written something that's perfectly fine. Run it past someone else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have a trusted person look at it, read it, tell you what it, and have them tell you what it means. That's the tricky part, right? Yeah. People are going, I never thought of that. Yes. Have some, before you push the send button, have somebody else look at it and see if it's what you meant to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ask them what it is. Ask them what it is that you've asked for or you've said. And if they can't tell you, your recipient can't tell you either. And that's the truth. They'll interpret it funny. Mm-hmm. Ken and others are saying the most important writing communication is to write down agreements so that you can, that they can be studied for full understanding. Yeah, write down agreements so that they can be studied for full understanding. Mm-hmm. One of the advantages of writing is, of course, you can study it. You can think on it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be your final agreement. It's just maybe an agreement step in the process. But it needs to be written down. First of all, it needs to be written down to make sure that we all agree, right? That that's what we said. That that's what we heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes you think you've been really clear. Excuse me. And maybe you have been, but that's not what they heard. And that's really the truth. I'm having that right now with a business associate. He keeps sending me emails, is this what you meant? Oh, and I keep sighing. And I keep thinking, you know, I ran the email past my assistant. We thought it was really clear, and you keep asking that. Now, I've gotten a nasty feeling that perhaps he understands this perfectly well, but he doesn't want to do it. That's a different issue. Mm-hmm. And something that you eventually have to find out about. I'm pretty much in the stage of asking. In a nice way. Yes, in a polite way. Because how many different ways can you instruct someone clearly? And they still go, is this what you want? And the answer is no. What kind of a crazy thing did you just send me? I don't want that. You see, yeah. So you need to have your instructions written down. Darcy and others are saying you need to write down the instructions for clear communication and write down anything that you've agreed upon to make sure you have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then perhaps you want to memorialize it in an actual signed document. But before you even get to that stage, if you haven't gotten the steps down so that everyone's agreed, you're not making it to the signed document. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jaden and others are making a very good point that when you've written something down, you still need to encourage questions and rewrite if it's unclear. Encourage questions and rewrite if it's unclear. Yeah. Because sometimes people go, well, we wrote it down, that's pretty much it. No. This is not written in blood. It is something that we're still working on. So encourage questions and rewrite if it's unclear. Mm-hmm. I reckon others are saying that we're getting back to the interpreter, that a lot of times he sees that you need more than one interpreter. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It depends on how many native speakers there are, and people may need to each have an interpreter. This is not unreasonable. I have done it like that. Well, when each person speaks, they interpret it into English so that everybody understands it. And then when someone else is speaking in English, they interpret to their person in their native tongue. It's an interesting way to do business. Excuse me. It's sometimes unavoidable. It makes a layer of opinion, the interpreter's opinion, between the participant and the group, because sometimes things don't interpret exactly literally. Hmm? And it's kind of, yeah, people are saying it's noisy. It's kind of a little disruptive to have, depending on how many people, to have that in the room. When I have a group that needs that, and I do occasionally because I get called in for multi-global business, I usually do, I set, this is usually something that's got funding, right? this is not the shoestring thing, because I'm third-party impartial, and there's enough funding for meeting in a place that can do this. I do the UN thing. I don't have everybody in the room, like the Tower of Babel, talking to their person both ways and to the group all simultaneously. That's too much. I will do either the written, the computer screen, where you can interpret not out loud, but using technology, using the computer screen so the person can see what it is that they're saying, read it simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like having words under a speech on television, right? Easy to set up. I'm not real fond of the interpreter talking in the room. It's distracting. So I really do. I have the interpreter write it out. And quite frankly, I like to see it written out because I like to see what they're saying too when they're interpreting it into English. And a lot of times, I'm not fluent in a lot of languages, but especially something I see a lot, I've got an idea what people are saying. And also, it makes a written record of it in case there's any question about what was interpreted. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of both ways. To have someone speaking in the room is very old-fashioned and very distracting. I didn't mean to imply that I had people interpreting out loud in the room. We do it with a computer screen. They type what's being said so the person can read it. Mm-hmm. First of all, this aids in understanding. Second of all, I can see it too. And third of all, it makes a written record. I like all of those things. Mm-hmm. That is not a hard thing to do, and interpreters come with that equipment. Really, they do. We have in our day, if there's a good budget for it, done the UN thing. It's a lot neater, and you don't have a bunch of people looking down at a screen where it's interpreted in their ear, where somebody has audio into the room. Everyone wears their own earwig, so to speak, and the person who is their interpreter interprets it into their ear. Cooler, neater, not really that much better than written, but yeah, you can watch the person and not have to watch the screen. It really is kind of better. More expensive. And you've got to have the equipment for that. Mm-hmm. So that's an investment. A lot of times I go someplace where it's truly set up for it and it's not a problem at all. They just go, yeah, we'll do that. And so there's lots of places in big metropolitan areas that can handle that, lots of conference centers. But if you're not in an area where you've got a conference center, anybody can handle the typing on the screen as you're sitting. The interpreter sits in the room and types it, and it appears on the screen in front of the participant who needs it. This way you can have six interpreters, because none of them are talking. It's not the Tower of Babel. They're all typing in their own language. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a way of doing it that is using technology fairly basically and using technology really coolly. The interpretation software, unless somebody around here is going to tell me differently that they've really found something that's boffo, is a little bit hit or miss. Yeah. So I haven't seen anything that'll really do it well. And I sure don't like the ones that talk for the same reason that I don't like the interpreter to talk in the room. It's distracting and annoying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are saying the interpretation software works well if you're clear. Well, I suppose. My voice is fairly low in timbre, in tone, and I always speak rather slowly and rather clearly. Does pretty good with me. go, my experience with the interpretation software, the stuff that really is not a human interpreting, but really a computer interpreting, has been a little iffy with people who have an accent, speak very slow or very fast. You know, it's got kind of limitations to it. Do it if you need to. It's the cheapest of all. And also you might not have access to an interpreter, a live interpreter. So it's not a bad thing. It's just that it's not my first choice. Mm-hmm. Primarily because I've seen weird words come up. Okay. So that's translation. This is a good point that Breen and others are also making about written communication. It's important to include everyone and to just CC them, to send them with the emails and like that. It's important to include everyone so that we all feel that we're part of the team. And there's no negotiation going on behind our back. So you have to remember that when you have a written communication, you don't want to fragment the team. You want everybody to see it. And if it's that personal, you might double think it. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying don't send it. Just double think it and have somebody else read it too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are the kind of communication skills? Oops, we're going to run out of time. What are the kind of... I know. I don't know that we're going to get to the recipes or not. A lot of times we don't because our conversation's so interesting. What are the kind of communication skills do we need? I'm going to call this group, which is pretty much the last kind of group. I kind of divided it into, there's two more. All right. Let's call this communication attitude, right? And that's, Nick and others are calling this the leadership example of fairness and transparency. Mm-hmm. That you tell everybody everything that they need to know and not fragment and only tell your favorites. No. We're going to be an example of fairness and transparency so that we all know where it is we're going, what it is we're supposed to do, and how it is that we're going to get there. Yeah. Fairness and transparency, very important. Kyle and others are talking about the tone of voice. Remember that we are the leader. We are the third party impartial usually. And we will act in a civil and reasonable manner. We're not going to get mad at anybody. They're all just trying their best. Right? Right. Tone of voice is very important. Also towards the persuasion that we talked about at the beginning of the show. Mm-hmm. Liz and others and Nara are talking about body language and facial expression. Mm-hmm. We actually did a whole show on that. The shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And it's very important. You know, what you actually say out of your mouth makes a difference, the tone and the attitude with which it was said, right? That's because you can write something down and it looks neutral, but if you crossed your arms and scowled while doing it and had that kind of tone to your voice, that made a big difference, didn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that goes to Caitlin's attitude of competency. Uh-huh. You're not a competent leader if you are using tone and body language improperly. Mm-hmm. And you must be a good example. And yes, that breaches the civility rules, doesn't it? And if you breach the civility rules as the upholder of them, as the leader, you cannot expect the participants not to breach them. There is no double standard in leading. Mm-hmm. Everybody will know. You need to do it. You need to be an example of fairness, an example of the civility rules, an example of transparency, too, because you want everything to be, you want to know everything. Therefore, you can't hold stuff back. Mm-hmm. People are asking how you get the confidence. We've talked a about gaining experience in our day and on some of these shows. If you're really new to this area, before you lead, be a participant. Even if you need to volunteer at something or make some sort of time commitment, you need to see someone really good lead. And I know that you get a lot of advice from this show, but it's not the same as watching it. It really isn't. You know, you can take all the advice that we get, all the advice that we get from here and from your colleagues and stuff, but you need to participate. You need to be able to judge what you like about somebody's style, to judge what you hate about somebody's style. You see, you need to participate in it. You need to say, you know, this is what I would like to see. So you need to participate and look at it and see what somebody who's good is doing. And, you know, sometimes somebody bad is interesting too. And as a participant, you'll be talking about the leader with the other participants. Listen to what they say. Because your participants are going to be talking about you amongst themselves. Right. And you want them to be impressed. Pardon me. Now, I'm going to make this is going to have to be our last topic, but it kind of is. And we've got just enough time, I think. I'm going to call it communication and problem solving. Sometimes you get a problem, right? Something happens. We talked about disaster a couple shows back and what to do about it. And sometimes things happen. You hit a snag. A problem occurs. And that's a real good test of communication. Because when you've got a problem, you've got to solve it. And you've got to solve it as a group so that you can go forward. Right. As James says, you must communicate the problem clearly. What's wrong? We've got to decide what exactly is wrong. Sometimes it's real obvious. The law has changed. You know, that's an obvious. But sometimes what's wrong takes a think. You're not exactly sure, but it's not working. There's a problem. So the first thing you have to do is communicate clearly, get in your mind and understand what the problem is and communicate it clearly. And then, as Freddie and others are saying, you might need to divide the problem into steps that need to be solved. It might be a kind of a general problem, but we need to do specific things to solve it. But you need help. You need the team, the group, to understand what the problem is so that we can fix it or go around it. Sometimes fix it isn't an option because it comes from the outside. Go around it and act in a different manner to solve it. That's an option, right? Warner and others are saying you need to want to ask for help. Yep, you sure do. You need to know when you have to bring in an expert too, right? Make some phone calls. Do some research. Divide into teams. Rethink what you're doing, right? When you hit a problem, that's what happens. You have to rethink what it is that your next step should be. Because the problem probably isn't exactly what you planned. We've hit a snag. What should our next step be? See, that's the ticket to it. That's the idea. What is it that we need to do next to solve this problem? So that we don't have it anymore. What's our next step? And that's where you go to ask for help also. Malana says that you need to be specific and decide as a group what is needed. We can't reach the goal if we don't know what it is, right? We need to define what it is that we need to do. Be specific and decide as a group what is needed. You know, this is a wonderful sentence. Hayden and others are saying this, but Hayden's really got this down. Hayden says that communication works both ways. Listen to opinions and decide the next steps in the process. Communication works both ways. Mm-hmm. Listen to opinions and decide the next steps in the process. It does. You know, pardon me. As leaders, sometimes we think of communication as just from us to you, to the participants, because we know what we're doing, we're in charge, and they are our people to lead, right? But that's not usually the case, at least. Now, maybe if it's a seminar, because we're the teacher. But even in the seminar, don't you want to hear opinions and questions and answer things? I always leave lots of time for give and take. I think it's the most valuable because I've made a presentation. It was darn competent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've taught you a lot, for example, as a teacher, as a leader, as a teacher. But you've got a lot of questions, and I haven't answered them to your satisfaction. Or you've heard the answer, but you don't realize it is the answer. Let's open it up to discussion. Let's listen, right? And especially if we're doing a negotiation, an alternative dispute resolution, something like that, we need to listen all around because we may not have the ultimate solution. Hey, even if we have lots of experience, every situation is different. You need to listen to all the opinions and then decide what to do. Yes. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really the ticket to communication. Communication works both ways. We need to communicate to tell people how to do something or what we think or what the next step will be. But we need to listen when they communicate just as we hope that they listen to us. Yes, very, very important. And I see that our time together is nearly up. And we have not gotten to the recipes again, I know, my friends. A lot of times we don't, I must confess this, because we have such a wonderful conversation. Thank you very much for all of your participation and for being here. Thank you for listening. If you want to connect with us, we are recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.